Welcome to this week's episode of the Blue Box Podcast. Brought to you by Starburst Magazine, the world's longest-running magazine of fantastic films and television.
Hello and welcome to the very first episode of this brand new and regenerated Blue Box Podcast. I am super, super excited to be here. My name's Beth. I'll be one of your new hosts for the podcast. I have to say, this is honestly a little bit of a dream come true. I'm sort of pinching myself slightly here because I have been wanting to do a Doctor Who podcast for so long, and I'm still kind of struggling to believe that I'm here, to be honest. And what about that intro? I'm super impressed with the intro. I've been like a little kid in a candy shop with all the little sound cues and things that they've given us. It's been so fun producing it, so super, super excited. Can't believe that we managed to get Tom Baker in there as well, the little snippet of Tom Baker. Very exciting.
Oh, hello. New teeth, etc. That's weird. Kidneys. I'm Kieran. I'm one of the Starburst magazine team, and I'm thrilled to have been invited on to co-host this new version of the Blue Box podcast, especially given we've got such a great, exciting new era of Doctor Who to talk about. And I do actually have all of my own teeth. I'll just make that clear.
So, we are going to be bringing you all the latest Doctor Who news. We're going to be reacting to the new episodes and kind of giving our thoughts, and we're also going to be bringing on lots of different guests to share their views, which is going to be very exciting. We're going to get all sorts of people on, from diehard Whovians to people that maybe haven't watched it in a while, or people that kind of never really got Doctor Who, and kind of they're going to want to give their thoughts. So we're going to have a lot of interesting different guests on, and our guest for today is Starburst's own Mike.
Yes, hello. It's good to be here. I'm the publisher of Starburst magazine, and way back in the day we started the Blue Box podcast, and it's been sorely missed, so it's great to have it back. Brilliant.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I think we're going to start off by getting straight into it with our initial reactions to Saturday's episode, which was a great return after a year for Doctor Who. Should we start off by giving our kind of marks out of 10? Do you want to start, Kieran?
Okay, so the Star Beast. Yep, I was just thrilled to have David Tennant and Catherine Tate back. I thought it was a wonderful episode. I thought they were such fun together. And honestly, I left the episode smiling and thought it was a lot of fun. 9 out of 10 for me.
Okay, solid 9 out of 10. How about you, Mike?
Well, here's the thing. I would say 8 out of 10, and it's only just little irks, but they are offset by the amazing production values of it. Mm-hmm. It looked so expensive. It looked like Doctor Who the movie. It looked like a movie budget. So I think a solid 8 out of 10. It would have been 9 or possibly a perfect 10 if not for something that we may get to bring up in a little while we discuss it.
Well, that's interesting, actually, because I wasn't expecting to be the lowest ranking out of this group, but I'm going to say 7 out of 10, actually. Strangely enough,
I am surprised.
Yeah, I agree with you in most of what you said, actually. I think for me it was also just kind of, I thought it was a very solid episode, but just kind of little irks. Like, I'll share some of my kind of like initial things that kind of bothered me slightly. So I guess I was a little bit worried by the whole kind of Hooliverse intro thing, only because it, to me, obviously smacked very, very much of Marvel and the kind of the Marvel intro with all of the characters in the thing, and it kind of immediately set off a little bit of a kind of warning signal in my head.
It's literally what they're going for.
Yeah.
Star Trek have got one now.
Yeah.
Marvel were early. They realised that worked for Marvel. So every single franchise has got it. Star Trek started about 2 years ago. And it's very, they're all the same. They're about 30 seconds long, little bit of music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I don't have a problem with that itself. It's not the actual kind of letters on the screen that bothers me. It's more the fact that it's kind of, I know that's obviously what they're going for with the, you know, sort of the whole Hooniverse idea, and people have been saying the word Hooniverse for quite a while, and you know, I suppose it makes sense that they're going to kind of try and turn it into a bit more of a franchise with all the spin-offs, but I was just a little bit concerned with obviously the sort of backing from Disney Plus and the fact that they're now in control of the budget. It immediately kind of, it's not a problem in and of itself, but it kind of smacks of things to come and the whole kind of franchise being a little bit kind of Disney-fied.
So are you concerned they're going to dumb it down?
I am, if I'm completely honest, because to me, like, Doctor Who has always been sort of obviously very much a kind of classic BBC British homegrown drama. And there were points in this episode where already I was kind of thinking, oh, Disney, get your grubby hands off this, you know.
I don't think it felt, the story didn't feel very Disney-fied at all. It felt, well, on the one hand, very Russell T. Davis in terms of it felt a lot like a 2008 episode of Doctor Who.
I was about to say, you'd invited me round your house and for something else, and I walked past your living room and I'd have seen that on screen, I would have assumed it was a rerun of one of those episodes, because it looks so similar. And can I just say one thing? Some people are saying how good David Tennant looks. I don't think Catherine Tate has aged a day since that. She looks exactly the same. It's a decade on, and she just looks exactly as she did.
She has aged incredibly, and they actually made a bit of
incredible.
I liked the fact that they actually made a bit of a joke out of that as well. That when they had that line where Donna says to the doctor, "Oh, by the way, you can wear a suit that tight up until the age of 35, no longer." And I thought that was quite funny. It almost felt like a little banter between her and David.
You might realise what I wear a lot, and I took it quite badly. I'm not admitting my age, but it's certainly over that. Yeah, I tell you what, I just got a question, it might open up things a little bit. Do you remember watching E.T. and the scene where Elliot says to E.T., E.T.'s just started saying, "E.T., phone home." And do you remember the bit when he said, "Oh no, dial it back a little bit, E.T., we want to sort your pronouns out first."
Well, I guess that was another of my little irks with some of the kind of dialogue in the episode. So I want to start out by saying,
I didn't know what to think of that.
At
the time, but the worst was yet to come.
Yeah. So I first of all, I did love the storyline with Rose. And, you know, I thought it was great that she was a trans character, and I thought they did it really well for the most part with the kind of, you know, the sort of the scene with Donna and Sylvia in the kitchen where they're talking about, was brilliant. Perfect.
And they're walking up the street and the people dead naming her. They nailed it. I was really happy.
Yeah.
Because in my heart of hearts, I was thinking, oh, all these people who've been waiting to stick the boot in over this character, they're going to find it really difficult because so far this is perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it didn't last.
And I also say I love how defensive Donna is of her daughter.
I love it.
That made me so so much more enamoured with Donna.
That was the thing. I thought that was great. And I really genuinely did. And I also felt quite at home. Not only had I got this show back from the last time when I was really dying to see it every week. It was something I was looking forward to seeing every week. And it's been a while since I felt like that about it. And I was back to that. And it's this, there is a connection between Starburst, me, and that story. And that Des Skin, who started Doctor Who Weekly, put the Starburst story in Doctor Who Weekly. That with he's the one who first got the first ever, well, if you don't count the TV21 stuff, the first proper comic version of the Doctor, because it was actually printed in American Marvel comics as well. So, and he's the editor, he's the person who started Starburst magazine. So Starburst came out pretty much at the same time as Doctor Who Weekly. And
oh, wow.
And then I ended up taking over Des's job, and now Chris Hayes has taken over and I'm the publisher of it. And so this story was quite an important one for us. So
yeah,
for me to have not liked this, and it to be, if I'd have said given it 4 out of 10, it would have had to be an absolute car crash, because
yeah,
I was emotionally invested, you know.
Yeah.
Can I also add just on that, in terms of it being an adaptation of the Doctor Who Weekly comic strip, I was really impressed that Pat Mills and Dave Gibbons got the credit next to Russell T. Davies in the title sequence.
Yeah, that was
and
lovely.
It seems like from all the behind-the-scenes stuff, they were treated with a lot of respect, because there's a lot of... Obviously, there's been a lot of comic book adaptations in film and TV in the past 10 years with the superhero boom. And I've heard, you know, stories of writers of and artists of Marvel and other comic books not being treated with respect by the studios.
They don't even get treated with respect when they land a big movie and they're the main creator of it. One of the main talent. They sometimes get named, but that's why a lot of the time some of these artists and some of these writers, Alan Moore in particular, they ask for the name to be taken off, because they've been treated that badly by studios in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really lovely that. But the why this story was so important is the other stories before this one were a little bit, but there was one that people seemed to like it. I don't, and a lot of people don't. It was about the Roman Empire with robots, that one. This one was the first one where it hit and it worked as a comic strip. Mm-hmm. You were reading it going, wow, this is actually a great comic, you know, because... You were reading it because you're a Doctor Who fan, and then that was the moment where this story, where you went, no, this is not some Cyberman or a Dalek. This is an original creation.
Yeah.
And the twist was the same in the comic book.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I wasn't sure if they were going to stick with that, or it was going to turn out he was playing a trick where he was actually a good, friendly alien. And, you know, because I didn't know, you'd ever know, do you? Like on The Walking Dead, they alter some of the episodes so that you...
Yeah.
Are on the back foot. You don't know whether they're going to stick to it or not.
I think it's a really good fit with Russell T. Davies as well, because you look at those Doctor Who Weekly comics and they've got a lot of things that you later see in Russell T. Davies' writing, like the whole domestic element, like the Star Beast in the comic. It's about a family.
Yeah.
And it's got this kind of cheeky sense of humor to it, which the TV show at the time didn't have quite as much, but has now...
Britain... In that comic strip, looks a lot like Russell T. Davies's London, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I think as well. I
Interesting.
Think again,
Interesting.
London when they were going around Camden, he does make London look good, and it's funny because I've seen a lot of movies like Mission Impossible and stuff like that that film in London, and it always looks a bit dull and a bit grey.
Yeah, well, they because the thing is, the fans, like a lot of fans, used to complain that, oh, you know, why is Doctor Who so London centric? All of the companions are from London, and that was kind of like a key factor in why they moved it to Sheffield during Jodie Whittaker's era. But I think you're right. I do think there's just something about, you know, Russell, especially Russell T. Davies's conception of London.
Oh yeah,
and sort of it just has a feel of Doctor Who, and I thought they got that from the very kind of first scene of, like, you know, the TARDIS and landing in the alleyway, and then it was so lovely to see David Tennant kind of, you know, doing his thing and kind of being all happy to be back, and you can just see it all over his face as he's sort of walking along. And then
that is a guy who loves his job.
Yeah.
Loves his job, and I do think that relationship, I think it's so good that they, if they were going to do this and have him back, that they wrap up this story. And that was important, because it was the loose end. And the other character that we've not seen yet, I'm dying to see, is Wilf.
Yeah.
I thought the relationship between the Doctor and him was, especially when he sacrificed his life to save Wilf, he was the person who is he will knock three times, wasn't it? And it was him. And I think this was this had to be told. If you were going to do three specials and wrap something up, I think this is genius, to be honest.
And I never was a big fan of Donna's original ending. I thought it was a bit of a shame for her to just have to forget everything. Yeah, it was sad, but there was always... It always did feel like there was another chapter of that story to be told. And
Who's better off then? If you hadn't seen the follow-up and what happened to Rose, where Rose originally just got left, she was heartbroken on the other side, in a mirror universe, lost the man she loved and would never see him ever again. Or Donna not having that pain because she doesn't remember anything about the most important friendship of her life.
See, for me, I actually disagree with Kieran slightly on this. I think we've spoken about this before, that we kind of have
falling out already so soon.
We've had like different perceptions on this, because I actually loved Donna's original ending, and that was actually one of my slight irks with this episode, because I didn't want it to be undone. Like, I was obviously very, very happy to see her again. And I kind of knew it had to be done at some point. But at the same time, there was a part of me that was like, you know, oh, she's happy. She's finally got her, you know, her husband, her lottery money, her daughter, whatever. And it kind of felt a bit like, oh, I almost don't want her to remember, because there's a part of me that I get a bit sick of the Doctor going on and on about how, oh, you know, I'm all alone, all my friends die. And then it's like, well, you've literally got about a million of them living their lives on Earth, perfectly happy, that you could go and visit at any time. So I don't like it when there's too many people just, you know, happily back on Earth, living their lives, ready for the Doctor to visit at any time, because it kind of takes away from the tragedy of it. I like there to be quite a lot of companions that do have tragic endings, that he can't go and visit, so he does feel more alone.
Like it to be grim.
But I like it to be a bit more grim, yeah.
He did explain I thought this was one of the genius things that Russell T. Davis brought to it, with when he brought Sarah Jane back. And then there's the question of, well, clearly there was affection for Sarah Jane, like there's affection for Rose. And then he explains, well, I leave because you all die and I can't bear it.
Humans decay, you wither and you die.
But the thing is, he said to Rose that he wouldn't leave her, and he was forced to leave her by the separation. So the question is, if he hadn't have grown another version of himself out of his hand to take around the galaxy, giving her a good seeing to, which is kind of a weird, that was a weird twist, that one. Would he have actually stayed with her until she was an old woman and died? Or would
now, that would be a storyline that I would love to see in some ways. I know they're probably never going to do it, but that would actually be quite interesting to see if there's anyone that he would stay
for. He told us she was different. If you remember, he said, not you, Rose. I wouldn't leave you, he said. Hmm. So they had to separate them.
They always say that.
That's what I'm getting, is he comes across as a bit of a Lothario.
Also, kind of following on from that, having said that I didn't like Donna remembering and I wanted her to stay kind of forgetting or whatever, I do think that they handled it quite well, because I liked the kind of final scene, you know, in the TARDIS when Donna's saying, you know, why does it always have to be so... This felt very real to me when Donna was saying, why does it always have to be such a big final goodbye with you? You know, why do you always have to make it so final? You know, why don't you come and visit? We could do outrageous things, like have dinner, you know, come and see me sometimes, I'm here. And I thought that was really good, because I constantly think that. I'm constantly like, oh, for God's sake, stop moping and being sad when you could literally just go and see them for a cup of tea.
Because it's pretty bad that some of these companions have nearly died countless times, and the fact he doesn't pop in to get for the 40th birthday or something, or the 60th birthday or the retirement or something.
They need a bit of therapy, don't they?
Not me writing a fan fiction about when he visits Sarah Jane on her 70th.
Well, they've got that support group now, haven't they?
Did he? I mean, he didn't pop in to see the Brigadier. He did go to see the Brigadier, you know.
He did.
He
yeah.
did, because he'd popped to see him in The Five Doctors.
Yeah.
Unless I'm remembering that.
Yeah, and the Brigadier came back yeah. in a few times after the first
undead.
Year. Yeah.
Well, that was a bit of a mistake, that one, because they went and set that in the 1980s.
Yeah.
And it should have been way... It was
oh, that old
in,
argument, yeah.
Yeah, it was in the... Well, it was. It's categorically, you know, because... One of the big twists in the early episodes, the first few of John Pertwee, was the news came on the TV and it went, yes, here's the news on BBC Three.
Yeah.
Well, there was only two BBC, it was BBC One and Two.
Yeah.
So it was literally, it was categorically the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he answered the phone, which was brilliant, he answered the phone, yes, ma'am, to the Prime Minister yeah. in 1973 when no one had heard of Margaret Thatcher. No one had heard of it.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we've all got some... We've all had some kind of different takeaways from the episodes then. But moving on to this brand new section.
It's time for the Blue Box Quiz.
I love that intro. Yes, so in this section, this is where we put our guest to the test. Oh, I'm a poet and I just don't know it. Guest to the test. We test them on how closely they were paying attention to the episodes. Are they doing their job correctly? Have they been watching?
I've seen it twice.
All right, so he has done his homework.
I need to do okay on this.
He's done his homework. It was so funny. We did a little practice, and he couldn't answer a single
car
question.
Car crash. It was a disaster.
It was quite amusing. So we've got some quiz questions here.
It was about another episode, though.
It was about another episode. Yeah. To be fair to him. So we've got some quiz questions here. Mike, are you ready to have
yes.
your knowledge put to the test?
Yes.
Are you a true Whovian? So the first question is, and this is a bit of an off the wall one. What is Rose holding when she first meets the Doctor in this episode in the Star Beast?
Wow. No, I don't know.
It is a bit of a strange one and not particularly relevant. But,
am I allowed to butt in if he doesn't know?
Yeah, Kieran can butt in.
Well,
if,
you remember
stuff.
That.
It's quite amusing.
Is it a bag of eyes?
It is a bag of eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, it's the googly eyes, isn't it?
Yeah, she's buying eyes for her little
business.
Homemade...
Yeah.
What are they? Are they like stuffy toys?
She's
sending them. I forget the country.
Abu Dhabi.
Abu
yeah.
Dhabi.
Oh, that might be the next question.
Yeah. it isn't, thankfully. But she's. I thought that was quite a nice touch, actually. That she's like, she says that she's trying to make some more money to help out her mum and dad. Because as we know, Dollar, it turns out, having been given a winning lottery ticket by the Doctor.
Yes.
Obviously, it turns out that she's given away
3.
All of their winnings.
8 million or
yeah,
something like that. And then it turns out that it's because they explain it as, oh, it's just her being really nice and she bought the house but then really just gave it away by being super nice. They sort of layered in that, oh, her subconscious had kicked in and it was her way of trying to help people like the Doctor.
I also did think it was a little bit strange, though, because if she's kind of meant to be more like the original Donna, like, you know, how she was before she met the Doctor because she can't remember him, it felt a bit odd because it did feel a little bit out of character
she
for
was
her
a
to
lot
give
more
her, like,
mercenary.
She was a lot more kind
yeah.
of like...
Yeah.
And when she first receives the lottery ticket, it's at her wedding. He gives it as a wedding ticket and she kind of tucks it down her bra and she's like, oh, you know, never know, triple rollover or something. So it kind of felt a bit odd that she would give it away, but
I've got a little side question that's related to this. In The Runaway Bride, obviously she was on her way to getting married.
Yeah.
Was it this guy that she was marrying?
No.
Did we see that guy?
Because that guy turned out to be he was in league with Arachnos.
Oh,
he was evil.
There is a question on this later in the quiz. I've thrown in a little kind of curveball question, which is not related to the episode. Well, related, but not related to this particular episode, just to test if Mike
Do you know what? I'm beginning to think that I only notice anything if it's involving science fiction. I only remember that stuff.
No, you're fine. Okay, you pretty much remembered that one. You got there. The next question that we have is, what was the name of Hewlett scientific advisor number 56, who we meet in this episode?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know. And it's annoying because on the way in the car, I actually thought I'm going to just make a note of some of the characters' names because I couldn't remember. I don't remember a name, no.
Kieran, are you...
Shirley?
Yes, it is Shirley. What do you remember the rest of it?
Shirley Ann Bingham.
Yes, well done. Two points Ann to Bingham. Kieran.
Okay. Yeah. Is that double-barreled?
I don't know. I have not seen it written down.
I'm not sure. It may be, possibly. Yeah, she's played by Ruth Madeley. I think that's how you pronounce it. And yeah, I thought she was a great addition to the cast. She was an interesting character.
I really liked how she...
Is she disabled in real life?
Yes, she is. Yeah.
Okay, well, it makes sense.
Yeah, she's a
But
yeah.
I got
wheelchair
filled
user.
In the TV yeah. show Hawkeye because there was a one-eyed dog and I thought that was really nice and it turned out that the one-eyed...
It's CGI'd.
CGI'd and I was very annoyed. Aww. I was very annoyed because that is a one-eyed dog that's been done out of employment.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I really liked how not impressed she was by the doctor. The doctor was like, haven't you been waiting your life to meet me? And she was like, nah, not bothered, mate. That's just a nice contrast to
Osgood. I like that, but when you add that up with something that happens later on, it got to the point where why are we suddenly treating the 14th Doctor as some sort of punch bag to a certain extent, only mildly.
Yeah, I mean,
cumulatively speaking,
it was kind of what I thought was interesting. I mean, obviously, it makes sense that you know everyone in Hewlett knows about the Doctor, and it kind of makes sense that not everyone's going to be as impressed as Malcolm. We remember how much Malcolm, for example, loved the Doctor and was a real fanboy. So not everyone at Hewlett is going to be kind of in awe of him, even though they've heard about him. But I did think it was interesting that they chose to do like. I mean, I know we're obviously, I think we're seeing Kate Stewart come back in other episodes, but I did think it was interesting that she was absent from this episode. And I don't know whether there is more to it or whether it's just, you know, she wasn't in this episode, but I did think, you know, where was she when this spaceship was crashing?
I hope she turns up because it'd be interesting to have somebody who'd already met him. In the old persona.
She's in the trailer.
Yeah, who'll suddenly go, oh, hang on a minute, but you're older now, so how can you be him again? And it's got more gravitas.
Well, I mean, Ruth, because Ruth asked that as well, and it was quite interesting because she said, like the doctor goes, oh, I was a bow tie Scotsman, then I was a woman, and then, you know, the Ruth...
Shirley.
mixed up between actor and character. And then Shirley says... you know, oh, that's in your future. You're not allowed to know your future. So she obviously thinks that this is the 10th Doctor. And I thought that was quite interesting, the idea that Unit have got a rule that they know all of the different incarnations of the Doctor and they're not allowed to tell each incarnation about, you know, their future. So I thought that was quite an interesting touch. But yeah, I did wonder whether... I mean, there may not be anything to it, but I did wonder whether there's... more to Shirley and more that we're going to see more like I hope she's not, you know, a villain in disguise. I hope she's a character to be trusted.
Oh,
but
I guarantee you she's not a villain
in any way.
I'm just using my psychic powers now. Is Russell T. Davis, after the furore over Davros, going to then cast someone in a wheelchair as a villain? I'm thinking not at the moment.
Oh, of course.
Or he would come across as possibly the biggest hypocrite.
Yeah, and we will. I'm sure we will come back to that.
We've got time for Davros on this show.
So the next question is, what was the name of Rose's friend / neighbour in the episode?
Neris.
Close. That's Dollar's friend/enemy, but we meet a little boy who is I think Rose's neighbour and kind of like neighbourhood friend.
Oh, I don't know his name, no.
He's not a major part of the episode, but Kieran, do you want to...
I'm putting you to shame here. Is it Fudge?
It is. It is.
Because he's a character from the comic. He's in the comic.
Yeah. Well, I won't remember that either, to be fair.
Yeah. It's, so it's 3-0 to Kieran at the moment.
Oh, he's doing well, isn't he? He's doing well.
And I've only seen it once.
So, I've seen it twice. I can't believe it.
But yes, Fudge is played by Dara Lal, and as Kieran said, he's an original character from the original comic strip. So they've brought him back to kind of sort of have a little nod to that there. So I thought that was quite nice. And he sort of brings the human element, I guess, of kind of somebody that's kind of looking at all this alien chaos and destruction going, what the hell's going on? Because I thought Rose was actually quite strange. I mean, I guess it turns out at the end of the episode that there is perhaps an explanation for this. But I did think that Rose seemed quite blasé at times.
Very chilled out, I thought.
I guess it was efficient storytelling, but you think you would be a little more surprised at this giant ferret from Mars. But I guess Donna provided that. I loved Donna's reaction on seeing it. Like, when she pokes the meep in the eye and then just...
That was bang straight back to the old character we knew and loved.
Yeah.
I thought that was amazing. I liked all that. All the physical performance from her and David Tennant was amazing in this episode. I thought the physical and the chemistry between the two.
They work so incredible. Well together. Yeah. They really do. I loved the kind of... Well, actually, it's interesting because I wasn't a massive fan of the new TARDIS design myself, but I did love the little moment between, you know, Donna and the Doctor, and you could see it was David and Catherine like shining through at the very end of the episode where they're looking at the interior of the TARDIS and they're going, oh, you know, it's gorgeous, and they're like freaking out and rolling around like little children, and you can tell that's kind of the actors coming through.
Well, do you remember what Wilf said when he first went into the TARDIS and it disappointed the 10th Doctor?
Yeah.
He went, I thought it'd be cleaner. And now it is probably the version he thought it'd be. It's beautiful. I would imagine it's very difficult to keep up with that.
And I love that kind of like grandfather, like granddaughter as well, because like Wilf's was, oh, I thought it would be cleaner. And then Donna's was like, oh, it's a bit nippy. It's a bit cold in it. And she says that again. She's like, it's still a bit cold.
Yeah.
So it's still a bit nippy. So I quite like that, the idea that they're sort of unimpressed by the TARDIS. But yeah, I guess while we're on the topic, I didn't hate it, but I didn't love the new TARDIS interior, because to me, it felt a little bit like, perhaps it makes sense because the TARDIS is, as we know, meant to be growing all the time. The, you know, all of the bigger on the inside starts kind of leaking out to the outside over time. So I guess it kind of makes sense in a way. But I thought it felt a bit too kind of open and kind of like bright and cold and clinical, like a hospital. It didn't feel kind of cozy.
I hope they use the space as it goes on. Like, I hope there are scenes that properly make use of the fact that it's so big.
Yeah,
because it must be a great set to film on. And like, I thought that the scene of the reveal of it, the wide shot of him running around, it was really nicely done. I felt
that was a nice scene, but I think there was something. It did. Even without that comment about how cold it was, it did look icy. It did look like it'd be a bit you'd need to. I don't know.
It needs a few things. It needs like a hat stand or a bookshelf or something.
My favourite interiors have definitely been, because much as I loved the David Tennant interior, like in his era as the 10th Doctor, I did think that was a bit grungy. You know, Matt Smith's Doctor refers to it as, in the 50th anniversary, Matt Smith's Doctor goes, oh, it's his grunge phase, he grows out of it. So that felt a bit grungy. My favourite TARDIS interiors have definitely been for Matt Smith's Doctor and for Peter Capaldi's Doctor. I've loved those, and then it kind of went a bit off with Jodie Whittaker, and then I thought this was
the first one,
better, but not quite.
Matt Smith's first one was... They had to, if I remember correctly, they changed it to the one that would cross over between him and Capaldi. Capaldi's would just have some bookcases added and some stuff to it. But I think there was that many reflective surfaces that they were having a great deal of trouble filming that set, the first one. But I actually loved the idea of the console being on that platform and all that. Not the sexist way it was used on one occasion, but I did like the fact it had a bit of depth and it was interesting to look at.
Yeah, lots of layers to it.
Yeah, I do like that. I mean, there was a picture leaks of the new TARDIS, and it looks like that one will be shooting Gatwas. And it was the one, it's got a Wurlitzer.
Oh, wow.
That was, it was leaked very early on.
Is this the same set as the one this episode?
I think it'll be the one after this.
I hope it changes again.
I think this feels temporary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame because it is a great set, but I think, it doesn't quite feel as homely. And I hope that also perhaps we get to see a bit more, considering how kind of there isn't actually that much in this new set to look at and do. I hope we start to perhaps see a bit more of the other rooms of the TARDIS, because that's something I always enjoy, like the odd episode like Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS, where you finally get to see the odd glimpse of like the library or the corridors or, you know, the swimming pool or whatever. I like it when we see beyond the control room and get to see that this is, you know, this is an entire house. This is where the Doctor lives. And I think this new interior will be offset if they show more of the other rooms. But I don't know if they're going to do that.
Well, it was absolutely enormous during Tom Baker's reign, because it's a very odd one, the Invasion of Time, because they went on a massive chase through the TARDIS, but it was clearly just swimming baths. It had all brick walls and stuff. It was so odd. They never really explained why that was the case. But the one I felt really let down with was, I was so excited during Matt Smith's era when they announced Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS, because I thought, at last, we're going to see it all, we're going to see all this, and we saw, I don't think we saw much.
Yeah, it was an odd episode, that one.
It was a really strange one, wasn't it? I mean, I didn't dislike it, it's just that I wanted to see the TARDIS. I wanted to see more.
Definitely. The next quiz question is, who do the noble family say is looking after Wilf? Come on, you must remember this
looking
one.
Looking after Wilf. Well, he's in sheltered accommodation.
He is. Who do they say has organised?
Oh,
that?
It's UNIT.
Yes,
it is. It was Kate Stewart, wasn't it?
It was indeed.
Yeah, that's
which I
right.
thought, which I thought was lovely, and I think that's obviously a more of a hint that we're going to see in the next couple of episodes, because I thought that was a really nice idea as well, with the idea of, obviously, I'm presuming she probably looked after, you know, her father, the Brigadier. She probably took care of him in his old age, we assume. And then the idea that she's, you know, Wilf is kind of perhaps quite similar as an old soldier, you know, she feels a duty of care to him. I thought that was really nice.
That was great. And I am so looking forward to seeing Bernard Gribbins.
Yeah.
Oh,
we'll see him.
I was so worried for a second when they first said, you know, he's not with us anymore, when the Doctor mentioned Wilf, and I thought, oh no, have they cut Bernard Cribbins' scenes because he didn't manage to finish them or something? Is he not going to be there? Are they going to say that he's died? And then they go, no, he's not dead, you idiot. He's in accommodation. He can't manage the stairs. And I was, oh, the relief. The relief.
It's probably the third one. It'll probably be the third one, won't it?
Yeah.
I know nothing about this next episode, so I don't know. I know that you've got the Toy Master, Toy Master, I get it wrong. That one. He's supposedly in the, is it the last one?
Yeah.
So that'll be where Wilf turns up.
I was going to ask about that. I was going to ask what your theories are for kind of who the villains are going to be, or for the Lex, because we know obviously the Toy Maker is definitely going to be a villain, but then obviously we had that very kind of cryptic remark from the Meep as she leaves.
That was the Toy Maker, surely, that she's referring to.
But that opens up a whole other kind of interesting dimension of, like, we know that whoever she's referring to, it's pretty much guaranteed that they've got to be a Time Lord, because she says, oh, my, you know, a two-hearted creature is such a rare thing. Wait till I tell my boss.
That doesn't mean that the boss has two hearts, does it?
I took that. Perhaps I've like misread that line, but to me that made it sound like her boss.
Well, he's
was
a collector. His character was a collector of stuff as well. Doing all these games, he's very much like someone who runs like that space museum one, and but I've watched that twice and Michael Goff, I'm a big fan of it, and he definitely comes across as a Time Lord to me. He's one of the Doctor's people in that. He doesn't say it, but then again, they didn't mention that the meddling monk was a Time Lord. They just said he's one of my people, and you knew he was because he had a TARDIS.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it's difficult. I'm hoping they'll explain it all.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was a bit, like, I think I just maybe, perhaps I misinterpreted that line, but I took it to mean that the villain, Meep's boss, was a Time Lord and had two, because they had two hearts. But perhaps I've just like misread that. But
I think it
could be either way. I mean, I know obviously we're definitely seeing the Toymaker, and I'm very excited for that. Neil Patrick Harris will be great in that role, I think. But it's just whether or not there's perhaps another less obvious villain, perhaps just having the Toymaker, because that's already been revealed.
I'm excited by how little we know about what's in next week's episode. Like, yes. I think we know episode 3 is the Toymaker, and we knew what was coming in this one. But they've really kept episode 2 under wraps, and I think there's going to be some big surprises in there that they've managed not to leak.
Because I was dead excited about, I waited to the credits, and I thought, it'll come on now, and there's nothing.
Well, I mean, there's also...
which is good.
Also, you know, we're forgetting it is a 60th anniversary, you know, bash. Yeah. And so far, we've not really seen any kind of... Obviously, we've had Donna, but, you know, we've not seen any other old companions brought back yet, or old doctors brought back. There's still a lot of room for kind of, you know, exciting things to come. And I think that was partly why I was ever so slightly kind of underwhelmed by this episode, because obviously, you know, I thought it was good, and I thought it was sort of absolutely fine, but it didn't blow me away, which is why I kind of gave it 7 out of 10, because I suppose I was sort of expecting more from a 60th anniversary. And but
it's the first part.
They are including the Tales from the TARDIS in that as well, so you are, if you're a fan of all the classic Who, you're sort of been treated to all those companions in that, which to me, some people really love it. I know that our head writer for the Maggie Believes coming on your next episode, Paul Mount, he adores them. He thinks they're great. I didn't enjoy them as much. I found them more tacked on at the beginning and end of these episodes, and some of the companions were better than others.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, but that was always the case. Some were better actors than others.
I'm very excited to work my way through those, actually, because I'm trying to save them till I've watched more of Classic Who, because I'm currently, like, now that it's on iPlayer, I'm currently binge-watching Classic Who, so I'm trying to save Tales of the TARDIS till I've
recommend
a bit more
content, the Tegan one.
Yes. Mm.
Because they're talking about Adric dying. Which is a big piece of...
Oh, you spoilt it for her now.
I mean, this was a spoiler that I don't think you can avoid knowing that Adric died. But apologies if that has spoilt it for anyone, but I doubt it.
It's 40 years old,
please,
bit of TV.
don't say that. I watched it when it was on. bloody hell, that's... I'm not thinking of spoilers when it comes to Classic Who. I'm just always... I'm like this with people, though. I just assume that everyone I talk to has seen every episode of Doctor Who that I've seen.
Hmm. I thought Tales of the TARDIS was a lovely little thing, because it enabled the classic Doctors to be in the 60th anniversary in some way.
Yes.
Without it overburdening these specials with too much continuity.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think if you do throw too much in, it can just be a distraction.
Like, they got them in. They were in Sylvester McCoy and Peter Davison and Colin Baker. Were in the Jodie Whittaker's finale, weren't they?
I think after we had that as the last, like, main episode of Doctor Who, Yeah. I'm glad that this was a lot simpler. Yeah. It was just a lot more stripped down. It was you know, the noble family and a fun adventure with a silly yeah. alien. I really enjoyed that about it.
I really did. There is a lot more to come. Like, I'm having to kind of remind myself that it is the first of a kind of three-parter, and it's almost like a mini series. So that's why I was, you know, if it had been a standalone episode on its own and that was the only 60th anniversary, I think I would have been very disappointed. Lovely though it was to see Dollar again, I think I would have been slightly underwhelmed. But because I know that we've got all of this to come, I think we've got some really exciting
did you
stuff
read
ahead.
The Star Beast comic, when have you seen it?
No, I mean, it's I haven't actually, because it's well before my time, but I'm gonna probably try and get hold of a copy now and have a read of it.
I think that's maybe a weakness, in that you definitely get more out of what of a buzz
nostalgia
watching it.
Yeah,
definitely,
yeah, definitely,
if you've actually seen it, because I'm right, Kieran, the similarities are quite stunning,
yeah,
aren't they? I mean,
yeah,
they've brought that comic to life.
Yeah,
even the good bad guys, you know, with the big the insectoid,
the Roth warriors.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I loved the action sequence where it's the big fight in the street, and then you see them flying.
Yeah,
I didn't expect to see them fly with the insect wings.
Yeah,
that was really nice.
I mean, that is one good thing that, you know, Disney Plus's involvement has, of course, brought to the series, which is, like, you know, the budget and the effects.
Sweet
of,
Disney money.
We've got to get a bit of that Disney dough behind it.
They're good
for that. So our final couple of quiz questions here: what turned Meep Kind evil? What turned them evil? He's thinking.
Oh, gosh. I really have not done any better at all on this.
I think this is going to be a recurring theme if we ever get you on. It's quite funny.
I'll see if I can keep the perfect anti-score going. No, I can't. I don't. I'm going to scream.
Kieran, do you have any ideas?
I don't know.
to be fair, it's a small detail. Blink if you miss it. But apparently, it's the psychedelic sun.
Oh, that thing.
They had a living sun, and then the radiation turned them evil.
Right.
Apparently,
yeah.
Which was a nice little. I mean, obviously, I'm sure a lot of people were expecting it. It was a fairly obvious plot twist, but I did like the kind of the Meep turning evil at the end with the "Oh, to hell with this!" You know, Miriam Margulies is fantastic voice.
She was brilliant.
And the change in the Meep's eyes and claws and things.
And it's funny how just them teeth made it look evil.
Yeah,
just the teeth, and that's what they did with the comic.
Yeah,
it was a shock with the comic, but as I said, I thought they were going to play the older crowd who read that comic book and just fool us, and we'd be watching it and waiting for him to be evil, and then it just turns out, no, he's actually really sweet. And
I was amazed in the behind-the-scenes things. They actually had it, and it actually did all that stuff, the animatronic. I thought it would all be CGI.
No, I think a lot of money went on that.
Yeah,
that's great.
Alone.
It's great that the actors can actually respond to it, and they don't just have to act to nothing. They can respond to like an actual creature. So that's nice. Final question, and as I said, this is the question where I've kind of gone back in time and picked an earlier episode with Dollar to kind of really test you. You may or may not know this. What was the name of Dollar's first fiance? Obviously, we know she is now happily married to the lovely Sean Temple, but who was her first fiance?
No, I don't know that. It's a shame, because this question you're asking me is what I was asking before, because I actually want to know the answer to this.
Kieran?
I want to say Lance.
It is Lance.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy, yeah. He is. He put him on Mastermind.
I think people have done Doctor Who as their mastermind subject before, but I'd happily give that a go.
I think
David Tennant did on Celebrity Mastermind
once. We should definitely get you on. You're an encyclopedia.
I think I got one, and it was an easy one.
So I think we can safely say that Kieran won that round.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I think it was, what was the final score? I think it was about, I think there was 8 questions. So I think it was about 7-1
No, there's one neither of us got, so.
Right, yeah, fair enough. It is now time for...
Who knew?
Yes, it is now time for Who Knew? This is the section of the show where we talk about all sorts of things. So any kind of breaking Doctor Who news, any big conspiracy theories, or, you know, any weird and wonderful kind of things that have come to light in the Doctor Who universe, our thoughts on various controversies. And I think in this week's episode, we are going to dive straight into the kind of, I want to say controversy. It's been a slight kind of interesting
debacle
debate around the decision with Davros. Kieran, would you like to give a bit of context on that for anyone who...
So, a week before the Starbeast, there was a little Doctor Who sketch on Children in Need, in which the 14th Doctor showed up on Skaro and gave the plunger to the Khalids, which became part of the Dalek. And it was a nice little comedy sketch, but the controversial element has been that we had a little brief glimpse of Davros, played by Julian Bleach. And he was in not human form, in colored form. He wasn't in his in his chair, and he wasn't mutated yet. Which a lot of people, well, I assumed when I was watching it that this was Davros before his accident.
Which by itself is not the first time you've seen a pre-accident Davros, because you've seen him as a child
in the Capaldi one. Yeah,
yeah,
and that kind of makes sense, and it wouldn't really be an issue
in and of itself.
However, Russell T. Davis has kind of come forward and very explicitly spoken about how this was a conscious decision to fundamentally kind of change the look of Davros, because they don't want to associate disability with evil, which I guess makes sense to a certain extent, but it's provoked quite a reaction on social media with some people saying, well, you know, this is ridiculous. Davros was never really, you know, I never interpreted Davros as being disabled. He doesn't actually look like he's in a wheelchair. It's just the bottom half of a Dalek. You know, what, you know, this is a character that's been his look for the last 50 years. You know what? I've never looked at Davros and thought that disabled people are evil, you know. So, but then there's other people saying, you know, this is great, this is what we need, this is moving forward. So I guess it's kind of, there's different ways of looking at it.
Well, the annoying thing about it is I didn't think that either, and just as background for this show, we also run a fantasy sci-fi cult TV bar called Fab Cafe, and then on the doors of the toilets I always have a fantasy icon for male, fantasy icon for female, and there was a disabled toilet at the one we had in Leeds, and I put the 70s detective Ironside because he was in a wheelchair, and he was the only icon or famous or fantasy figure, you know, from a TV show that I could think of to put for the disabled sign. And I could have put Davros, it turns out. And I didn't know, because I never thought of Davros as being in a wheelchair.
Maybe I am just dumb.
I just didn't.
He has a big accident and he's driving around in a chair afterwards. So
I thought he was his life support machine.
There's definitely a wheelchair's a kind of support machine in a way.
I always think a wheelchair, you've got to see the wheels.
Yeah. Oh, it's just a chair.
Yeah,
I mean, to me, it kind of felt a bit like, you know, surely, I mean, I personally never read this character as being a member of the disabled community, but the way I was kind of thinking about it is, even if you do read him in that way, surely that's, you know, good representation. Surely having a disabled character in a series is better than null at all, or, you know, and I don't think necessarily, I mean, maybe they're, what do I know, I'm not disabled, but I don't think there's necessarily people looking at Davros thinking, oh, he's evil and he's disabled, therefore all disabled people must be evil. You know, it seems a bit of a leap.
It's a powerful character.
I think the issue is maybe more with deformities than with particularly wheelchairs. Like, if you look at that Tom Baker era of Doctor Who where Davros first appears, there are a lot of deformed villains, like the Master, after he's got all burnt for a reason I've forgotten.
It's his deformity, and then because just bear in mind they've never explained what happened to him.
Yeah.
And I thought he was mutating, not it was an accident. I thought he was mutating into a Dalek.
Yeah,
because of the radiation. That was supposed to be what happened to the Khalid people, wasn't it? They were supposed to have mutated into Daleks because of the radiation.
Yeah, because that's it. There was he was all Davros did, because the Khalid race had been in Genesis of the Daleks had been exposed to radiation for that long in the war with the Fals that they were mutating and would eventually become the Dalek.
Hmm.
So what he did was wrong. The only interference that he's supposed to have done is he removed their emotions, didn't he, if you remember? Yeah. So therefore, Davros, I always thought, was not quite as far gone.
Mm.
If that makes sense. Because I don't remember if it's ever explicitly said that he was deformed or crippled or he'd been in an explosion.
Well, I didn't think it had ever been explicitly mentioned. To me, it just kind of seemed it could almost be like an aesthetic choice on his part to use the chair because he wanted to look like a Dalek. He wanted to look like his own creation. It could almost be like a conscious choice.
I think what actually happened to Davros in universe isn't actually the issue, though. The issue is that people only ever see like people with what looks like deformities in villainous roles, and when that becomes a common thing, it sets off this subconscious association.
This latest episode is this part of him trying to redress that balance by putting a very likable, good character who's disabled in a wheelchair in, and giving that actress a big role in it. And as also you've got his novelization of Rose, the first episode of New Doctor Who, 2005 episode, because he has future versions of the Doctor in it, and one of them is a wheelchair-bound Doctor.
Yeah.
Well, to me, I suppose my view on it was kind of just like, I'm not disabled, so, you know, you can do what you feel is necessary, but then at the same time, the only way in which it would slightly frustrate me would be for continuity reasons of like this scene was fine, you know, this is before he was supposedly had the accident or whatever, but you know, if you wanted to see him, a future version of him, it wouldn't really make sense for him to suddenly be walking again. But I guess also, you know, I'm not disabled, but I am a woman, and I've kind of sat through countless episodes of Doctor Who, particularly under Stephen Moffat's era, when, you know, some of the dialogue is quite, you know, explicitly sexist, I would argue, at points. But it never occurred to me to start, you know, ranting over the internet or writing in and complaining. And I do feel like sometimes people seem to have quite strange priorities, because to me it's a bit like, what's the big, you know, I suppose that it you can address it all, but what's the bigger issue? Literally sort of explicitly sexist dialogue or, you know, a character that possibly might be interpreted as being disabled and possibly is that, you know, it kind of feels like
Doctor Who fans love an opportunity to rant at stuff over the internet. It's kind of, it's what we do.
They ranted over this.
Look, with regards to the continuity thing, I think, look, it's a time travel show. If you want to do Davros in the future now and he looks like this now, you can say a time traveler went back and changed things, or a flux, or the crack in Amy's wall, or a time warp, or whatever. And I just think if you might not agree with all the specific decisions are being made, but I think it is very reassuring that, you know, after, as you said, that there has been like sexist dialogue and that there has been problems in various eras. I just think I'm glad Russell T. Davies is making conscious efforts to improve representation. Like, I'm glad we do have a great disabled heroic character, and you know,
it certainly can't hurt,
I
guess.
I think Davros looks crap like this. I just think that Davros is such an iconic bad guy. He's one of the top, if you were to do a list of your top 10 Doctor Who monsters/villains, he's got to be in there.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose that was where, you know, where I would come from, if it's a shame in that sense. But anyway, I suppose the other little nice piece of news to discuss is the Daleks being colorized. We've got the Daleks in color now. The first ever episode featuring the Daleks. That's a nice addition.
Yeah, so this aired on BBC4 on the actual 60th anniversary on the 23rd. And it was, so the original, the Daleks, it's six episodes that are, you know, 25 minutes each. I guess when you take the credits and stuff off, it amounts to about 140 minutes approximately. And this was cut down to 75 minutes in a new abridged edit, colorized with new music.
To put it in context, I just ask you, had you watched all of it before, like in one sitting, all six episodes?
I had done, yeah. And that's...
Because it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, as much of a great story it is, and a great piece of TV of its time, watching the 440 minutes these days.
I know what you're going to say.
It's a bit slow.
It is a bit slow. And I watched it probably before you did, when I was younger, and it was the first time it had been seen, and then it hadn't been repeated for a long time. And even then... And I found it slow. And since watching it recently, there's a lot of stuff. And this does, I think this makes it appealing to someone younger who's got way less patience than we've got.
Well, of course, there is the slightly interesting thing about the Daleks, though. It's now the first episode of the original classic Doctor Who that people are going to see in the collection on iPlayer, because of the whole controversy surrounding, you know, who's got the rights to the first few episodes, and a certain person being very difficult with allowing the BBC to show the first few episodes.
So for those who don't know, this is the son of the original writer. The original writer was Anthony Coburn, who was hired to write the first four episode story, and now he's since passed, and his son Steph Coburn believes he owns the rights and has been causing a lot of faff with the BBC, not letting them have them. And
he's an idiot, this guy.
Well,
you want to listen to what he said. And can I say that the last time he made an offer to the BBC, this has been going on for decades, and the BBC have ignored him because they don't believe legally. They've had proper legal advice, and they've been told that he doesn't have this. He doesn't have the rights to it. And it's gone on for ages. They've ignored him. And this time, for some reason, they blinked. And I believe that they've made a massive mistake, because they've given him credibility that he didn't have until this point, that he can even use in court. But I'll just say this to throw in the mix. It's a very important piece of information, this. He said as part of his settlement, he asked for an amount of money, but the important thing that he wouldn't budge on, when he said, I will just sell these rights to you, that whether you agree or not, here's a settlement figure. He gave him a settlement figure, the one thing he wouldn't budge on. He wanted them to fund his screenplay.
Ah, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
He wants to be a famous writer. He wants to be on TV with his show that the BBC have paid for.
So he's using it as leverage in some ways.
Absolutely.
I didn't realise that. And you've got quite an interesting perspective with like the legal side as well, because obviously...
Yeah, still a barrister, still qualified. I like to read these things and pick them apart and look at it. And I think they've had terrible advice. Whoever said to the BBC, you've got to just leave it off, they probably thought it was a safe little compromise in that it's not on there, so they don't have to deal with him. They don't have to settle with him. They don't have to carry on writing back and forth. But the truth is, he didn't have enough money to sue the BBC. It will take you 80 to 100,000 just to get the writ served and to pay the fees for all the barristers, the solicitors, to even get to court. He couldn't have sued them, even if he had a case, which I don't think he did. And I think the BBC made a real mistake here, because they've just, by leaving that off, they've as good as admitted that they believe he might have a case.
Mm.
It's actually quite boring, the first one. Yeah. I mean, and we're saying that the Daleks were slow. My God, this is three. The first episode's great, but the remaining three episodes of An Unearthly Child are the tribe of gum.
Cavemen politics. A lot of cavemen politics.
It's so boring.
It's better if you get straight into the Daleks, to be honest. Watch the first part of An Unearthly Child, where you can find it legally these days, wherever that is. It is still on DVD, and then going to the Daleks.
The first target novelisation of Doctor Who was David Whittaker wrote it, and it was just Doctor Who and the Daleks. He basically put the first episode of An Unearthly Child at the beginning of it and then went straight into it.
I was going to say, speaking of cavemen politics, that's an interesting segue. We have been gathering up some of your interesting comments.
Speaking of cavemen, here's our readers.
Speaking of
your audience.
Our dear audience. We've been gathering up some of your comments and theories, reactions to the episode. So we've got some to read out here. We've had some great responses.
Yeah, no, overall I'm pretty impressed with the Starburst readers' comments, because like if you look on any of the official Doctor Who tweets or whatever, there's a load of top comments which are just people going, "It's so woke." But we've got a lot of of actually intelligently articulated comments. So thank you to everyone who responded. David Geldard, lovely David Geldard, says he absolutely loved it. RTD is back with a bang. He really enjoyed it, but more importantly, lots of people who haven't watched it for years have tuned back in and are talking about it again. I just hope they stick with it when Shooty takes over and it isn't just the David Tennant factor. And he also says his favourite part was the TARDIS interior reveal, which he thinks looks very cool.
Yeah, I think definitely it's a great way to get old viewers back into it. So yeah, that's very true. And I think we've got some exciting things to come, as I say. Yeah.
Here's a comment from Billy Hindle. I thought the episode was pretty good. It didn't blow me away, and it was nowhere near being one of my favourite episodes. But it was about as RTD as the first episode of the new era could have been, in a good way. Simultaneously took itself seriously at times and not at others, and found a good balance. As a trans person, she says she felt the representation of Rose Noble was something that was greatly needed in 2023. Russell T. Davies is a great ally, and I felt the way the trans storyline was dealt with in the first half was so genuine and amazingly written. I feel the second half was a little clunky in this regard, but generally positive, and in terms of general storytelling, the last act felt a little underwhelming, but I give the episode a solid 7 out of 10.
Yeah, so I think she's got very kind of similar thoughts to me, to be honest, because
as I was saying before,
I thought the trans storyline and the trans representation was great, and I'm so glad that she's kind of, you know, valued that representation and seen herself in that. I think the only part where I thought it was perhaps a little bit kind of I didn't mind it, but I just thought it was a bit, it didn't really make sense, was I loved the idea of the meta crisis passing down because Donna had a child and that was how they were able to survive, mm-hmm. because the power was split between two people. What I didn't like, and where I thought perhaps the kind of the trans storyline, perhaps it wasn't really relevant for it to come in at this point, was the fact that you know, the Doctor then says, "Oh, but you know, you've still got the meta crisis inside you. You still can't sustain a Time Lord brain," and he's about to kind of do something to presumably to save them or help them.
Yeah, to,
and
then they to say, help save
and,
their
then,
life.
And
yeah.
to help save their lives, and then yeah. both of them say, "Oh, but you know, we can do something that a male presenting Time Lord would never understand. We can just let it go." And I was like, "Well, I'm sorry, but that nothing to do with like transness or anything like that." But I just thought that was a really silly. It's a bit offensive to men as well. What have, you know?
It's
why
very
like,
offensive.
It's a bit kind of
regards.
Like, what's it got to do with being male presenting? And it makes no sense. Donna do
well,
that?
Well,
I
think it was actually the bit that's more offensive is the when if you were still a woman, you'd know.
If
it's just Donna giving the Doctor a bit of grief, I think it works. But if you try to take it seriously as part of the meta crisis plot, it doesn't add up.
Because I was there thinking like, oh, you know, great, we're gonna see him do something to save them. They still just let it go. Well, why didn't Donna do that the first time? Well, then, if that's possible,
I thought the fact that she'd given half of her Metacrisis powers to her child was it was enough to explain, you know, why she didn't die.
I didn't understand why you had to tear him down just to build them up.
It just didn't.
That to me is negative. That's where you got all these bigots that hate anything trans, hate anything involving gay or black or anything that they can't wrap their tiny minds around. The last thing you want to do is load up bullets for their gun.
You don't want to give them the ammunition.
This is the ammunition. The earlier part, I can imagine some of them were watching this going, I'm going to really hate this trans character. And I bet they had a real problem finding a problem with Rose up until that line of dialogue. And that line of dialogue handed them everything they need to go and moan all day long on the internet. Mm. And it's difficult to defend that line of dialogue. Yeah. I think it's really badly written.
Yeah, I can see that. I think on going back to the trans representation, I think I was a little worried in advance because it being Disney now, and there's been a lot of history of Disney saying, oh, there's going to be like a queer character in this movie, and then it's just like a little cutaway, like that happened in Rise of Skywalker, and they cut it out when they show the film in China, in Saudi Arabia.
They did.
And I'm just so glad that Russell T. Davis made Rose being trans such an integral part of the story that you can't cut it out without butchering
the story. I just don't think that it should be a middle finger. No. I think it should be, it had integrity. That her story and the characterization had integrity right up to that point.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think that they lost some of the goodwill that they'd been
built it does it. It does it that, a little bit just of a, that little, a line. Little bit of a disservice. Yeah.
I was very surprised. Yeah, that line. I mean, and then it becomes cumulative because then they'll go back and they'll. Yeah. Well, I'm joking about that pronouns thing.
Yeah.
That a bigot will be adding that together with this, and it's just. Well,
I've already seen some kind of, you know, I've already seen some like quite bigoted criticism. Anyway, let's see, we actually have
another comment on that very issue from Rowan Johnson, who says he didn't really get the whole a male presenting Time Lord wouldn't understand bit. Because he felt it undermined the inclusive nature of the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
And Stephen Moffat seemed to do a lot of that kind of thing too. But other than that, he says he loved the episode, the meat was brilliant and the twist was perfectly timed, and the Doctor and the Noble Temples were absolutely on point.
I'd agree with that. Have we got any other interesting ones? I think we've had some great...
Let's see. Tom Wilson said it was very much felt like it was written by the same guy who wrote Midnight and Love and Monsters. RTD is back.
Well, that's quite high praise because Midnight, I think, might be one of my favourites.
That is high praise indeed. Tom Wilson, I believe that is one of my acquaintances from my friendship group. Is that you, Tom? I'm assuming it must be. I'll have to message you after.
I did say to get old familiar people. David Geldard before, he's one of the oldest, not oldest as in age, as in longest serving readers and listeners to quite a few of the Starburst shows.
Yep.
So you've done, he's kind of like your good luck charm. If he's listening, you know you've done something right.
Thanks, David.
should we have one more theory or reaction?
James Monaghan says the TARDIS looks like a swimming pool. The lights are cool, but it could do with some potted plants and maybe a tiki bar.
Well, this is what we were saying before, wasn't it? It could do with being a little bit more homely.
It's a swimming pool.
It's a bit clinical.
I'll have another look at it.
Swimming pool is an interesting.
See what happens if you fill it with water.
So that I think that just about brings us to the end of this week's show. How time flies when you're having fun discussing Doctor Who. We've already gone slightly over the time we were hoping for, I think. But we'll round off, I think, by giving any kind of thoughts, theories, ideas for what we might like to see in future episodes, what we think is coming in future episodes. Do you have any ideas, Kieran?
Oh, I just hope I get surprised, really. I'd hope the next episode has some interesting villains who we're not expecting. Like, to be honest, I have no idea what to expect. I'm a little worried because I'm actually on Saturday evening, I've got to be at a wedding, so I'm just going to have to like delete social media off my phone.
Well, I was
good
saying,
though, isn't it, that it's back to that level where it's a water cooler show again. It's been a while, and yeah, it's nice. I'm not one of these fans of the show where, you know, you get some fans who, when the mass audience come in, they resent that because they're the true fans. Well, no, I think it's much more fun if everybody's watching.
Well, I think I think one of the comments we got was saying, like, you know, it's the most excited I've been about Doctor Who in a long time, and I think that it's what you say is definitely true about, you know, it's nice to be sort of wanting to watch it on Saturday night, because I haven't felt that way in a while. I'm actually babysitting on Saturday, so I'm going to be either forcing some snotty children to watch it with me or having to catch up on it later. I don't know whether they're Doctor Who fans or not. I'm hoping I might be able to convince them, but otherwise I'll have to catch up. Theories for next episode. I'm not sure about the villains. I don't know. I'm interested to see who we get. I think it would be nice if there was a bit of a twist somehow, and the toy maker isn't the sort of the big bad, and there's another kind of villain perhaps that's working with him. My friend actually went off on a bit of a wild tangent and came up with the theory that it's Hecuba, the sister of the toy maker, that was in an audiobook, one of Big Finish's audio productions. And I had to remind my friend that we probably won't be seeing a Big Finish creation on a BBC show, but I thought that was an interesting thing.
We've had a villain from the comics though.
Yeah.
Well, you got that, but that won't have been crazy expensive.
Yeah.
And the if you use Big Finish created characters, you will have to pay them residuals every time that episode is screened, and you'll also have to pay for any DVD Blu-ray release. So they ain't gonna do that.
I mean, I think the toy maker is a great sort of deep cut continuity, bringing someone back who was last seen in the series almost 60 years ago.
They've tried to do it a few times.
Yeah.
He's a very much beloved character, because one of the reasons, I think, is because that was the first time you saw colour photographs of William Hartnell's Doctor. They took some set photos of that, and they were wonderful. They were all in colour, and this was before people were good at colourising black and white photos. So that was turning up in quite a few magazines, so people were curious as to who this character was, and he had this I can't remember, it's like kaftan gown, and one of those hats that I don't, the name of them escapes me now, and he looked very interesting, and I am so certain he's a Time Lord.
Yeah Well, one thing that I hope we don't see any more of, unfortunately I think we are going to see it, is the now miraculously slightly overpowered sonic screwdriver, which I wasn't keen on the idea that the sonic screwdriver is now apparently capable of creating force fields and drawing interactive diagrams.
I was going to mention that it is that could have got him out of nearly every problem.
We've already got the problem of the sonic screwdriver being far too much of a convenient plot device, let alone if it can create force fields and draw in.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought that was very Disney. That was another occasion where I just thought that was very Disney-fied, and I didn't like that.
Well, creating a view screen.
Yeah. I liked him making the little screen, because that's handy. Just doing a kind of thing he'd always did on it anyway.
Well,
like, he always used
us,
it,
because we can see what he's looking at.
It's just us seeing the way he always saw it. Yeah. I thought that was quite cool.
Because he used to look at it, and we would never really know what he was seeing.
Yeah.
And Jodie Whittaker did it a lot.
Yeah.
She was always looking at some part of it. That wasn't a screwdriver. She just called that a sonic.
Yeah.
It's like a lance more than a screwdriver.
Because she built it out of Sheffield steel.
Sheffield steel. So I do like that episode, that
I
one.
I suppose it's more the continuity of, like, suddenly the screwdriver being able to do things that it's never done before. But I will get used to it.
Well, what
can
it not do now?
But, yeah,
if it can do that,
I don't know.
That force field, it did look good though.
It did.
But
that
would have solved a lot of problems, wouldn't it?
And
I can't believe he wouldn't use it. It's a Disney force field.
I mean, again, all of these little things in isolation, can be overlooked, but I just hope that, you know, it doesn't start to be. I just have this kind of because I love it so much, and it's, you know, it's a show that I care about so much, I just hope that it doesn't keep going in the direction of becoming too Disneyfied, you know, and too kind of flashy, and, you know, I want it to maintain that kind of homegrown drama feel. But I'm sure it will, with Russell T Davies being good hands anyway. So on that cheery note, we will have to leave it there. Make sure to tune in for next week's second anniversary episode, and listen to our thoughts and reactions on the podcast afterwards. Send in your reactions and theories as usual via social media, or if you want, we have a dedicated email address. It's blueboxpodcast@starburstmagazine.com. So feel free to send in your reactions and thoughts and theories on there, or get in touch over social media. Tell us you disagree, if you like. If you've been listening today and you think we're wildly off the mark, get in touch and tell us so. Tell us that you think we've got it completely wrong, and educate us if you would like. We'd love to hear from you. And that is all from us.
Well,
for this
can
week.
I say thank you for having me on your inaugural episode? It is indeed an honour.
And, oh, thank you for being the guest.
I believe this is going to run for a long time. I think I hope you guys enjoy it, and I hope everybody listening supports the Blue Box Podcast.
Oh, I hope it does too. I hope it runs for a long time. I'll never get bored of doing it. So,
yep. Thank you all for listening, and see you next time. And hope you enjoy this week's Doctor Who.
Thank you for listening.